Let's look at our Bibles today, 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 2. We've been talking about what it means to be have the characteristics of the end times and how to make it, how to have the identity that God needs for us, that we need for us to be able to make it. And last week we talked about servants. The week before that we talked about soldiers. And this week we're going to talk about stewards and what it means to be a steward. The word steward is found 10 times in the New Testament. So it's not as prevalent as the word servant, where servant is like 122 times, but the word steward is found 10 times. And there's certain characteristics that stewards have that I think that all of you can relate to. So let's read this together, 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 2. Moreover, it is required in stewards that they be found faithful. That's found in New King James Version. And so probably the version that you're more used to is the New Living Translation. It says this: now a person who is put in charge as a manager must be faithful. So there's a little clue there on the definition of what a steward is he's a manager. And then the Amplified Version says it like this. There's a phrase in the Amplified Version that catches it real well. It says that for a steward, it is essential and demanded that they be found faithful and trustworthy. So a steward is someone that is entrusted with the resources and he's like a household manager who is put in charge of property, finances, resources, provisions, and other stewards as well. So he has a lot of responsibility. And these were often gifted and educated people, executive officers who answered directly to the owner. And they acted with this, what we call delegated authority. And they could be removed for, if they didn't do a good job, they could be fired or let go. But their role provides us of what the New Testament means when we hear that word stewardship, because in all instances that it's said in the New Testament, they are caretakers of what ultimately belongs to God. So that's what that's what they're called to do. And the thing that I thought about is that, you know, I look at this through a pastor's eyes because that's what I do, but here's the reality. The truth is that we're all stewards, every one of us. And what we're stewards over, if you're a mom or a dad, you're a steward over your family. You're a steward over your paycheck, over your finances. You're a steward over your time, over your talents, over your treasures. If you're a boss or a supervisor, you're a steward over the responsibilities that have been given to you and entrusted to you, maybe the other workers as well. But ultimately, we are stewards of ourselves. Like, we're supposed to steward ourselves. We're supposed to manage ourselves. That's what that means. And many times we don't even think about that, do we? We think that this was like for some group that was, you know, had it more together than we do, or they're more spiritual, or for leadership or pastors or whatever. And yes, it can relate to those people, but it relates to you and me too. Like, we are stewards over our lives. We will give account of what we did with our lives and what has been entrusted to us. And Renner says this, there's three words that we find there in that verse. If you look, it says required in stewards that they be found faithful. Those three words. So the first one is required, and it's a word that explains that there's intense examination that's given. So someone who is found as a steward, they have been under scrutiny, and they have been examined, and it's almost like, I've likened it to, because I watch a lot of crime shows, you know, it's almost like a crime scene investigator that goes in, and he or she, they look at all the evidence, they look at all the facts, and then they determine what course of action needs to be done. And many times they take pictures, there's evidence, there's all kinds of things, but what they're trying to do is they're trying to evaluate and examine the situation so that they know what best next steps to take. You could almost make argument that maybe it's like the health inspector that comes, you know, that checks out things, that's looking for any little thing that they can see that needs to be improved. Or maybe it's like a commander or an officer that has his men fall out and they're in detail, or maybe they're in procession and they're looking, you know, for any type of, you know, maybe dirt on a rifle, or maybe they're not standing at attention the way they need to, or maybe their haircut isn't as short as it needs to be, or whatever. There's all kinds of criteria that different people look at for different things. But the word that is mean as required is that there is a careful inspection that's going on. And what we gather from that is that God is carefully inspecting our lives all the time. I mean, you know that? God is looking in us all the time. Like, he's looking. And what is required of a steward is that we understand that he is looking and that we hopefully will be found faithful, is what the next word says, found. And that means that after a long period of inspection, in different circumstances and situations, maybe under stress, maybe under duress, maybe under really painful situations, God is looking to see how we respond in these areas. He's watching to see what we do. He's watching to see how we treat one another. He's watching to see if we're going to pass the test, if we're going to do the right thing. He's always looking and he's always watching. Do we give up easily? Do we quit easily? Are we defensive all the time? How do we deal with adversity and opposition? How do we treat one another? Do we get on stuff or do we just let stuff slide? Do we just say, we'll get to it later? How well do we do in these areas of our lives? Do we do the bare minimum or do we go the extra mile? See, God's looking at all that. And you know what? It kind of makes me scared a little bit when I think about that. I think God's watching me. He knows everything that's going on in my life. He's looking at my motives. He's looking at my actions. He's looking at how I treat other people. He's looking at how my relationship with him is going, how it's progressing, or am I sliding back a little bit. He is interested and involved in every area of my life. And it's under constant observation. I think the worst thing that can happen to someone is that they're put in responsibility when they're not ready for it. I mean, all of you have probably been on the receiving end of that. I mean, I'll just ask you to see a show of hands. How many of you have served under a boss that wasn't really in the right position? Or maybe I'll say it like this. They weren't qualified or they didn't have the character. And you're thinking in your mind, who did they know to get this position? Like, how in the world did they find themselves in this position? And many times it's called failing forward. It's that they do so bad, and what do? They don't want to fire them, so what do? They promote them, and they just go up the ladder, and pretty soon you have, and I think that's what's wrong with a lot of, you're going to see this play out more and more in our nation, where stuff breaks because there's no leadership. People are not taking what I'm talking about serious, so what they do is slide by. You never want to buy a car on a Friday or a Monday that was built on a Friday or a Monday. I mean, that's the old saying. The humor of that, because, you know, they're hung over from the weekend on Monday, and on Friday they're ready for the weekend. You never want to buy something that someone worked on Monday or Friday. Here's the thing. Every day ought to be the best day. Every day. Because we're doing it unto the Lord. And what happens is when people are put in positions that they're not ready for, you know what happens? Everybody else suffers underneath them. Everybody else. And that's why it's so crucial that if we find ourselves in a position or we have responsibility, we are stewards to steward it well. I am constantly, you can ask any one of my staff members, I am constantly saying, what can I do better? How could I have done better in that message? What could I have improved on? There isn't a week that goes by that I don't look inside and say, what could I do better? And especially in my own spiritual life, in my own walk with God, Lord, what do you want to say to me? Lord, what do you want to do in my life? I am constantly on the lookout to improve and to do better. And I think we all would welcome that as well. It's interesting in church life. Church is kind of a strange animal, because in church life, we have grace and mercy, but yet whenever somebody gets fired or somebody gets let go, we're devastated by it. Like, we're like, well, why did they let them go? Why aren't they working there anymore? Well, maybe they didn't do the job. Maybe there was a character issue that came to the surface. And we seem to have a different set of rules for the church than we do anything else. I want to tell you something. The church ought to have the best of the best of the best. And if they don't cut it, they probably ought to go find something else to do. Maybe it's not a good fit. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's not a bad thing. Because they're probably not happy, and everybody else around them isn't happy either. But isn't it funny, in the church, we think that that we shouldn't strive for excellence, or that it shouldn't be done with quality and precision. This should be the most efficient, best organized place that you can come. Because when there's organization, there's safety. When there's structure, there's peace. There is. And if anything goes and people just do whatever, if there's no vision and there's no criteria, then it creates chaos. And it creates unsettledness. And the worst thing I want in my life is I don't want to feel unsettled. I do not want to feel unsettled. So we should really take those characteristics and apply them to every area of our lives. And then finally, he says faithful. Faithful means loyal, having integrity, trustworthy, dependable, reliable, devoted, unwavering, constant, unfailing, and true. How many of you know when I read that there's not a lot of those characteristics in a lot of people today? Like, most people aren't faithful, are they? Most people aren't faithful. Unfortunately, wouldn't it be great if we were all just faithful to the nth degree? I mean, we're 100% faithful all the time. But we, you know as well as I do, that oftentimes we come up short. But I want to be more faithful. I want to be more trustworthy. I want God to depend on me. I want to be one of those people that God can look at when he's looking through the earth and say, I can depend on that guy. That's a guy that I can trust with my responsibilities. And I know you feel the same way as well. You know, the thing is this, that if I guess we could add to the word faithful, you really got to be called at whatever you do. You got to feel that calling. And when you're called to something, you'll push through under adversity. And when you're called, you'll do it whether you have a title or a position. It won't matter. It won't matter if you have the title. And I'll even say this, if you're called to something, you'll do it even if you don't get paid for it. I remember years ago, we were in Moldova, and we went into this classroom, and all the kids' hands were cold. There was no heat on for months. And this is in Moldova. I mean, it's cold. It is cold. And they turned off the heat. They didn't have money to pay the teachers. Guess what? Those teachers showed up every day to teach class. They didn't get paid. They weren't getting paid. And they still showed up for work. You know why? Because that's what they were called to do. See, if you're called to something, you'll push through even when the circumstances dictate otherwise. And that really has to do with character. You know, character is something that happens in your life when nobody else, it's the real you when nobody else is around. And if there's calling, there has to be character. Character is one of those things as a believer that is the most important thing that you have. If you could have one or the other, character or competence, always go for the character. Because if you're incompetent, you can learn skills. But character is one of those things that, generally speaking, you either have or you don't. Now, you can learn to have more character, of course. You can learn to be more faithful. But ultimately, you know, people are who they are. And I want to be a person of character because I know that's what God looks on the most. And but you got to have competence, too. You can be a great guy, but if you don't know how to do your job, that's only going to last so long. By the way, you know what the number one characteristic of that people want in their leaders? Number one characteristic, honesty. That's what they want in their leaders, number one. That's character. But I want to tell you something right underneath that is competence. And if I don't do my job, it'll play out. Like, you're going to see it somewhere down the line. You're going to see some ball that's dropped somewhere. So there's character, but you gotta do your stuff. You gotta know your job, and that's called not just brushing up on your skills, but continued education, being with the Lord, letting God pour into you. Listen, we never arrive in this thing. We are always constantly growing and maturing and learning. Listen, I'm reading stuff all the time. You know why? Because I need it. I'm continually reading. We just got back from a conference. I'm always trying to better myself because I want to be relevant in the years to come. I want to be competent in what I do. I want to be the best at what I do. I don't want to just get by because of my experience that I have. I want to continue to push and grow and do better. And I know you feel the same way as well. So Jesus illustrates this really well in Luke 12, and we're going to start with verse 42. This is the main part of this sermon today because I think this will really define what I'm talking about in a greater sense. Verse 42 says this, "The Lord replied, 'A faithful and sensible servant is one to whom the master can give the responsibility of managing his other household servants and feeding them.'" Depending on your version, it says faithful, maybe it says faithful and wise. How many of you it says faithful and wise? Yeah, faithful, sensible, faithful and wise. So the idea is that there's this partnership of faithfulness, which is character, and wisdom or sensibleness, which is competence. Does that make sense? Illustrates exactly what I said. So they have a responsibility of managing the household of the servants. You know, God's given each of us a responsibility. All of us. All of us have responsibility. Even when you don't think you have responsibility, you do. You have responsibility. God's given you resources to manage. He's given you time. You have time. You have your gifts, your talents, your abilities, all those things I mentioned earlier. Your resources, your gifts, your callings, all those things God has asked us to manage, and He wants us to manage them well. And it goes on in verse 43, "If the master returns and finds that his servant has done a good job, there'll be a reward." Of course, right? We want that to happen. We want to hear him say, "Well done." But I tell you the truth, the master will put that servant in charge of all that he owns. So there's a time where if you're found faithful, you will be given more responsibility. And then he then contrasts that with the other type of person in verse 45, steward, that says, "Well, my master, he's not going to be back for a while, and so what's he do?" He starts beating the other servants, partying, getting drunk. And the master, when he comes back, he returns. Notice these two words, unexpected and unannounced, or unannounced and unexpected. You see, we're waiting for the Lord's return. And it's going to come unexpected and unannounced because the people are not faithful. Those who are faithful, it won't be unexpected and unannounced. Because if you're about doing what God wants you to do, then you're not going to be caught off guard. And many of us are really freaked out by all the stuff we're seeing in the earth today. You know, the mark of the beast, the Antichrist, and all that. Listen, you find yourself faithful, and you won't have to worry about any of that. All that stuff will take care of itself. But you do this. You do this. What I'm talking about. You're ready for when He comes back. When you won't be caught unexpectedly. You won't be caught when He comes unannounced. You'll be ready for His return. And you will be found faithful instead of unfaithful. He continues on and he says this, verse 47, "The servant who knows what the master wants but isn't prepared and doesn't carry out those instructions will be severely punished. But someone who does not know and then does something wrong will be punished only lightly. When someone has been given much, much will be required in return. And when someone has been entrusted with much, even more will be required." And so there's this explanation at the end of this that is quite disturbing to me. And the disturbing part is that there is a punishment that goes for the unfaithful, and there's a reward that goes for the faithful. And when you read Luke chapter 12, what you'll discover is that whole chapter nearly is talking about the end times. It's talking about the last days, the character that we need to have in the end times, the identity that we need to carry. And in this section, it describes, at the very end of this passage, it describes rewards, and it also describes punishments for not doing what we're supposed to do. And we'll explain that in a little bit of why that's the case. So let's talk now at verse 42 through 44. He talks about wise and sensible servants. The interesting thing about that word wise or sensible is it means someone who is able to look at a situation and size it up. Have you ever known somebody like that? Like they could walk into any type of challenge, or you know, maybe they're in a situation where everybody else is perplexed by it, but they can walk in a situation and they can sum it up in just a few moments. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about wise and sensible servants. Have you ever known someone that had all the head knowledge, but they couldn't put it to practice? What good was that, right? I want to be able to apply what I know practically to make my life and to make other people's lives better and for God to be well pleased. So a wise and sensible servant is someone who can administer the resources in a very practical way. It actually means that he's very savvy, he's very sharp, and he or she is able to look at a situation and sum up all the details and now learn what the best course of action to take is. I heard a story of a guy that he was a consultant, he was retired, and they called him back in to assess this impossible situation. I think it was how to get an airplane into a hangar, I think is what it was. And you know what this guy did? He came out of retirement, he walked around the hangar like once or twice, and he knew the answer right there. And all these guys who had all the knowledge and all the degrees and everything, they couldn't figure it out, but this guy took just about, you know, less than an hour and walked around the hangar, and he figured it out in just that amount of time. That's what this is talking about. And by the way, I'm not criticizing education. But listen, how well are we doing with how smart we are? How well are we doing with that? There's a lot of people that have a lot of degrees, and I want to tell you something, we're not any better off because of it. We're not. And what we've discovered is that practical knowledge and wisdom, taking what you know, your experience, your education, and then taking that and applying it. If it means getting a degree, so be it. But listen, let's take what we know and make it better. Let's be able to size up situations. That could be that you could call that discernment. You could call it all kinds of things in the spirit realm, that you can talk to a person and just hear their story in just a moment and know exactly what they're suffering with, know exactly what they're dealing with. We can apply it to situations. We can apply it to anything that God puts in our path for us to steward over and through. It's real important that we do that. Are you a person of your word? Are you a person of integrity? It's important that we make sure that we are wise and sensible. Dake says it like this. It's kind of a progression. If you'll notice verse 45 through 46, he says, first of all, what happens is that there's this thought that the master's not going to come back. So that kind of gives them a free pass in their minds. They're like, well, the boss ain't looking, you know, he ain't going to come back, so I can kind of do whatever I want to do. You know, I can show up late for work or whatever. I can just kind of skate by and, you know, dip in here a little bit, take a little bit. No one's going to know. No one's going to care. And all of you know situations like that where people did that, where they never really knew that there would be a day of reckoning or a day of accountability, that they were going to have to be able to explain why they did what they did. But it always comes out, doesn't it? It always does. But the thing is this, Dake says it's where they begin to turn away from their master, and that's where they say in their heart, well, he's not going to be back for a while. Second thing they begin to do is they begin to treat other people bad. They begin to beat their fellow servants. They begin to, you know, ridicule them. Listen, if your walk with God isn't right, you know what will happen? It'll play out in how you treat people. It will. How if you ever see people that can't get along with other people, it's because their walk with God is not intact. They're not where they need to be spiritually in that sense. Begin treating people bad, beating them, doing all these things toward them. And then finally it says this, they become a glutton and they become a drunkard. Well, gluttony is one of those topics that we don't like to talk about in church. Do we? Gluttony? You know what gluttony is, right? Look it up. It's something, you've never heard a sermon on gluttony, have you? I've never preached one in all my years. I've never preached a sermon on gluttony. Gluttony is where you eat too much. You indulge too much. In the ancients, they would eat till they threw up, and then they'd go back and eat again until they threw up, then they'd go back again and eat until they threw up. And it was just this cycle, you know. They wanted to taste the food, and it was this whole thing. I remember one time I ate this big meal. I was downtown Oklahoma City. I ate this big meal, and then we went to Cold Stone Ice Cream. That was a mistake. So I went to Cold Stone Ice Cream, and I got this, I don't know what it was, but I had to go to the bathroom and throw up because it's like, I can't do this. But I didn't go back and eat again until later. So, but a glutton would go back and eat again. But making yourself throw up because you eat too much. Well, we don't talk about gluttony because in the church it's called fellowship. So we don't talk about it. You know, Grandma Hubbard's banana pudding, you know. Aunt Jenny's Texas sheet cake. You know, and what do? We love it. I love it. But too much of it isn't good, and then we get preoccupied and fixed and focused. Probably our nation needs to go on a big diet, don't we? Some you guys don't like this, do you? You're not at least smile at me or something here. Come on, right? Well, then he talks about being a drunkard too. And see, what this stuff does is it dulls our senses so that we're not prepared for the master to come back. Like we're preoccupied with all this stuff around us and we get caught up in it, and then we're not ready for when the king returns. You know, when my kids were in high school, Deb and I, occasionally we go on missions trips, and I don't know what we were thinking, but one of these trips, you know, we left my son in charge, who I think he was probably 16 or 17 at the time, you know. It's like, oh, that was a mistake, because when I came home, I noticed that there was this picture that we loved, and it had, the frame was messed up. Like, what, something's going on here. And I looked down on the ground, on the floor, and the hardwood floor, there was some dents in the hardwood floor. And I said, those jack wagons were doing something. And sure enough, I found out that they were running through the house. They had a party while we were gone. They were running through the house, and one of them fell into the picture, and it fell down and screwed it up, and they were trying to fix it before we got home and everything. And then I was looking, and I've told you this story, but, you know, we saved our money to buy this dining room table. And, you know, we always had hand-me-down stuff, you know, and it was good and fine, but we saved enough money to buy this nice dining room table. You know, my wife, she picked it out. It was perfect, great. And I come home, and I look at that table. I was like, what'd you guys do? Because there was these little divots in the table. And I knew exactly. I was like, you jack wagons were playing quarters, weren't you? Yeah, Dad, how'd you know? Well, because I used to do it too, so. But I was so fired up because they're ruining my stuff, man. And we came back, you know, maybe not so much unannounced or unexpected, but I definitely didn't expect what I found when I came back. One more story. So we were selling the house, you know, getting it ready. And this was about the same time. And, you know, the realtor would call and she'd say, okay, get ready. We're going to bring some people over to show the house. So get ready because I'm coming over. And so Deb was vacuuming, and over next to the kid's bed, she was back there vacuuming. She looked down there, and there's a stain that's about this big. And it's a stain like, it was red syrupy stuff. And so, of course, I was like, what is going on? So I got down, and of course, I smelled it. And it was, someone had thrown up like cinnamon schnapps or some sort of, I don't know what it was, but they threw up and they left it there. And so now we got these people coming to look at the house that we're going to sell. So I got the utility knife out and I cut that piece out. And then I called my carpet guy. I said, Doug, you got to come over right away. You got to patch this for me. And so he patched it. And I said, so what happened? And my daughter fessed up and she said, well, we had a party and one of the kids was in my son's bed because he was drunk and he passed out, and when he passed out he threw up and it got all over, and she didn't know it because she would have tried to clean it up. So she took that cut piece of carpet and took it to school and put it on the kid's car and said, you owe me $50 because you're going to pay for what my dad had to pay the carpet guy to come and patch that in. But here's the thing, when we're up to stuff, we're never ready for it. It always comes unexpected, doesn't it? When we're up to stuff, when we're doing stuff that we shouldn't be doing, it always happens unexpectedly. And so we want to be prepared. And the why isn't so that we won't get caught. That's why we don't do the right, why we do the right thing. We do the right thing because we love the Lord. We do the right thing because we care about Him and what He thinks about us, and not because we have to, but because we want to. That's why we do what we do. That's why we're good stewards. We manage things well because we want to please God, not because we have to, but because we want to. And so that's real important, because the unexpected and the unannounced comes to those who are unfaithful. And then notice what verse 47 says. It says, those who know and those who don't know. Those who know what they're supposed to do, and then those who know they don't know what they're supposed to do. And so there's a judgment that's equivalent to what you know and to what you don't know. And that tells us that, you know, we wonder about people in other parts of the world, New Guinea or wherever these tribes or peoples that are in far off jungles somewhere, and they've never heard the gospel. Well, there it is. They don't know. We will only be judged on what we know. And if we don't know it, then it is what it is. That's why it's important for us that the Bible says that if you're a teacher, you're going to be found under stricter judgment because of what you know. And so when you know something, you will be held accountable for it. Especially if you know something and you don't do it, you knew what was right and you didn't do it. Now, here's the part of this story that bothers me, and that is this, that this judgment that happens. I mean, you guys read the story. I mean, this is serious. This is serious stuff. When the master comes back and he doesn't find his servants doing what they're supposed to be doing, when they know better, then he takes action. And I thought about that. I thought, why would he be like that? Well, here's the thing, all right? If you had a kid or a son or a daughter or an employee and you constantly told them what to do and they didn't do it, what would you do? I mean, you just going to let it slide? Or is there going to be what we call a reckoning? Is there going to be a reckoning? Are you going to take action for what they did or for what they didn't do? And see, that's the seriousness of what I'm talking about, is that God will take action based on what we've done in this life. And thank God that we can do it through relationship, that He's merciful and a kind and long-suffering God. But I'm going to tell you something. There is a day that we will have to give an account of what we did in this life. I mean, you can't explain this any other way. There's no other way to explain this away. Well, it's a metaphor. He's talking about something else. No, it is saying what it's saying, that we are going to have to give an account of what we've done in this life. And so for me, I'm like, God, help me. God, help me. Romans 14, 12 says this, yes, each of us will give a personal account to God. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, later in that chapter, that we read in the last part of verse 5 says this, then God will give to each one whatever praise is due. So whatever we've done good, we'll get praise for. Whatever we've done bad, we'll be called an account to explain what we've done. Now, Jonathan Cahn says this, and this will help some of us today, because many of us think, well, Pastor, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. How many of you feel that way from time to time? Like, Pastor, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Okay? I'm going to help you with that, because here's what he says. I read this, and I was like, this makes a lot of sense. He says, now listen, the scriptures do not so much focus on finding the will of God that you don't know, but on obeying the will of God that you do. So what does that mean? It means you do what you know to do. Whatever you know to do, that's what you do. Because here's what will happen. Here's what will happen. When you obey the will of God that you do know, it will lead you to the will of God that you don't know. So follow God with all your heart for that which is revealed, and it will lead you into that which is not revealed. Does that make sense? So it's real simple. You just do what you know to do. And what will happen is, if your heart's right and you're in the right place and you're moving ahead, more will be opened unto you to know what to do. So when I first got saved, there was an announcement made in church that they needed some ushers. So I was like, okay, I'll be an usher. I was 17 years old. I just gave my heart to Jesus. And I was like, well, I got to do something because God saved me. And I told him I'd serve him and whatever he asked me to do. And so my job was to count the ones. I've told you guys this story many times. My job was to count the ones. So, you know, the ushers would take the offering plates and go in the back in Pastor Lauren's office, and we'd count the money. Well, my job that I was given was to count the ones. And you know why? Because nobody wanted that job. Because in those days, there were a lot of ones in the plates. You know what I'm saying? Change and ones. There wasn't a lot of 20s or checks or whatever, 50s or 100s. So the head usher, he got to do the checks. But I got the responsibility of the ones. So all I knew to do was to count the ones. And I want to tell you something. I was the best ones counter that Emmanuel has ever had. I was the best ones counter. I'd have to do the change too, you know, there's a lot of change in there and I have to count that and stuff. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. Do what you know to do. That's all you do. Do your best. If you're good at fixing cars, help make your services available. Help people, bless people. If you're good at baking, do what's in front of you. If you're good at figuring out math problems, how many of you know that there's a bunch of kids that need tutoring? If you're skilled at calculus, if you know how to sew, if you know how to assess situations to make people's lives better, maybe you're a trainer and you can help people lose weight. I mean, whatever it is that you can do, do it because you're the steward over it. You're responsible for your gifts and your abilities. Don't worry about what you can't do or what you don't know. Just do what you do know. And what'll happen is you'll figure out the rest. Now we're going to bring this to a conclusion today. 1 Peter chapter 4 says this, that all of us have a gift. Verse 10, God has given each of us a gift of the great variety of spiritual gifts. But listen to this, it transitions now a little bit because he says, use them to serve one another. And he says, do you have a gift of speaking? Then speak as though God himself were speaking through you. Do you have a gift of helping others? Well, that doesn't seem very spiritual, does it? But we can all help someone. And it's a gift. It's called the gift of helps. But there's also just the plain and simple gift of being a blessing to people. And that's what we can all do. He goes on to say this, do it with all your strength and all the energy that God supplies. Then everything you do will bring glory to God through Jesus Christ, and all glory and power to him forever and ever. Amen. And so we're entrusted with these gifts that we've all been given. Some are spiritual, some are practical, but guess what? They're all beneficial. They're all beneficial. Let's stand together. So you know what happens in the end? So this isn't in your notes, but I'm going to give it to you. It's found in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 14. It says that if we're faithful to the end, trusting God just as firmly as when we first believed, we will share in all things that belong to Christ. How many of you want to share with what Jesus has? I want to share with him everything he has for me. How do you do that? By being faithful. Just be faithful. Just be sensible. Be wise. Be a person of character. Do the right thing when nobody's looking. Inspect your life, which is what we're going to do right now. I want you to bow your heads. I want you to ask the Lord, is there anything in my life, Lord, that I need to adjust? Is there anything that I need to change? Is there anything in my life that I could do better? Is there anything in my life that you're not pleased with that I could do better? So, Lord, help me with that. Show me what it is, Lord, and I'll be faithful to respond. Lord, forgive us. Forgive me, Lord, for complaining and not being appreciative of all that you've done for me and not being mindful of things that I could do better. And Lord, I thank you that it's not a perfectionistic treadmill that I have to be on, but Lord, it's one where I can be holy in your sight, Lord, and I can be better. So help me with that, Lord Jesus. Help us all with that.